This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
While many investors chase a tech boom that has yet to fully materialize, and major indexes already flirt with record highs, it feels like we're running out of those under-the-radar opportunities with the potential to elevate your overall portfolio. But with Masterworks Advisors, you can diversify your investment portfolio beyond stocks and bonds and into blue-chip contemporary art. It's an asset class that's outpaced the S&P 500 for the last 28 years by 64%, and the process doesn't require millions or art expertise. In fact, over the same period, art investing has been an effective way to reduce volatility in a portfolio relative to rate of return. So schedule a call with Masterworks Advisors at masterworks.com/skip. That's masterworks.com/skip. This advertisement relates to the provision of advisory services by Masterworks Advisors, LLC, and is not intended to offer or solicit investment in any securities. Masterworks Advisors is affiliated with Masterworks.
On just a couple of hours sleep, he joined after an election night. I decided I wasn't going to go crazy. As many of you know, if you're watching my social media, I went to the Georgetown basketball home opener just to kind of decompress. So that's where I was. But he was still looking at things, doing the analysis, anxious to talk to him to see where things are. Obviously, things not still yet resolved. The founder of Daily Kos, Civics with a Q, the host of the podcast, The Brief, Marcos Melitzis, on this Thursday Kos once again. Hey, buddy, how are you?
I am feeling triumphant, Mark. This was an incredible election night. Not just, you know, we can get into it. So many different angles to really hit on, but from a very, very like high level macro point, if we can win an election under historical headwinds with the economy the way it was, with the way Joe Biden was, just imagine what it's going to be like in 2024. I mean, we have shown that we can win in the most challenging environment. It really sets us up for future success in elections down the road. So I'm so incredibly excited, not just about what happened on Tuesday night, but what it means for 2024.
So did we win? Are you confident holding the house?
We won. So it doesn't even matter. I'll tell you. So in a typical midterm election, right, the party out of power loses an average of 30 seats, usually loses state legislatures, loses governorships, loses all that, you know, down the line. What we did on Tuesday night was something that we haven't seen since 2002 after 9/11, when George Bush barely, you know, held his ground in Congress. And so what we ended up doing is, We're not going to know who has control of Congress for a while. I would guess at this point that Republicans may have maybe a 2-3 seat majority. That's not a governable majority for them. I mean, this is there's not. I would not want to be McCarthy in dealing with the nihilist caucus with that kind of majority. And actually, it might even help us heading into 2024 because it gives Democrats something to rally around, something tangible, because they're going to be passing just the most ridiculous legislation. But I'm not conceding that. I think there's actual very real chance that we may just barely be able to hang on. It all depends on a bunch of Western seats that will take, you know, a week to 2 weeks to count all the, because ballots could have been postmarked on election day, right? So you got to wait, you know, three, four days for the ballots to arrive, and they got to be counted. It takes a while. And there's a lot of very close races in California, Oregon, and Arizona. So we may yet keep control of the House. And to be very clear, I would prefer that we keep control of the House. I don't really want to deal with McCarthy and his BS investigations and whatever else they may want to do. But the Senate, I'm feeling good about Nevada and Arizona. And we have the runoff in Georgia. I'm feeling very, very good about the runoff in Georgia. I think we actually do better in the runoff than we did this cycle. There's a lot of people that may have turned out for Kemp, the governor, that are not going to turn out for Herschel Walker. Yeah. And so, and then the whole combined might of the Democratic GOTV operation, which really proved its worth last night, is going to, in most places, not so much in Florida, but the rest of the country did a fantastic job. You know, a lot of that will come down in Georgia. And so we'll have a lot of resources, a lot of money to make, to push Warnock over the hump. So I think we'll end up with a 51 seat majority. Unfortunately, it's not the 52 seat majority that we wanted to make Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin irrelevant. So things like DC statehood and Puerto Rico statehood, like those things, probably not going to happen. That's a little distressing and disappointing. But given what the historical trends were, could have been a lot worse. We could have been blown out in the House and given Republicans a substantial lead in the House. We actually, on the governorships, we picked up two governorships. We may have lost the governorship in Nevada. It's not looking great, but a lot of it depends on what kind of votes are outstanding still. But we kept, this is very important, we kept the governorship and Secretary of State offices in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, and we know how important those are. We kept the Secretary of State office in Arizona, and there's a very good chance we may have won the Arizona governor's race as well. So, and then we picked up Maryland and Massachusetts. So worst case scenario, we're still going to be net positive winning governorships. We have now the trifecta in Minnesota, in Michigan. Michigan wasn't even in the cards. Nobody thought we had a chance to win either chamber of the Michigan legislature. We picked up both of them. We picked up the state house in Pennsylvania. We kept, you know, Republicans from veto-proof majorities in a couple of states, including North Carolina. Again, very, very important because we have a Democratic governor and the North Carolina legislature is trying to steal elections. North Carolina leans red, still a battleground state. So you look at ballot initiatives, not only did a bunch of states legalize marijuana use, but also I think five states enshrined a right to abortion, including Kentucky and Montana, to Republican states. And I don't know if it's official, but I can say very confidently that Lauren Boebert has lost her election. Given what was outstanding, there may be recounts, you know, we'll see, but it's hard to see how she hasn't lost the election. And anytime you get rid of Boebert, that's a pretty good election. So in the aggregate, you look down the line, the fact this would have been a great election result in any election. The fact that we did it in a midterm election when the party in power historically loses 30 seats and with, the, you know, oil companies manipulating the price of gas in order to hurt Joe Biden's approval ratings and accumulate gross, you know, record levels of profit. And with inflation being the way it was, the fact that we did what we did as a party and as a movement is absolutely incredible. So again, that we did this with all these headwinds is incredible. And it makes me really excited about what we're going to do that. And we don't have details. It's way too early, but by all indications, the youth vote was strong and that we can build on that in 2024. Like we don't need to get first-time voters to be first-time voters in 2024, obviously. And it just puts us in an incredibly strong place for these upcoming cycles. So I'm pretty excited. And I guess, you know, I haven't slept in days, but I don't even feel like I need to. At some point, I'm going to crash. Right now, I'm still riding high.
That's good to know. Also, pushing back against the narrative a few days out, which has still kind of been a narrative on some of the coverage. I mean, this need to placate the right. It's going to be a red wave. And even the chyrons on TV, even on some of the channels we frequent, says what the Republican, in the little lower third, what Republicans need to gain control, not what Democrats need to keep control. So, you know, that's been demoralizing. And we talked about that ad nauseum, just this need for mainstream media to pander, speaking of pandering, to pander to that audience. And they were just all dead wrong. Nothing.
I think
late as 7 o'clock last night, Chuck Todd, somebody tweeted Chuck Todd was still talking about a red wave.
Yeah, I know we've talked about it ad nauseum, but it deserves to be talked about ad nauseum because it was clear that there was no red wave. Now, there is a way to talk about this election in a way that is based on honest observation of the facts. If I'm a traditional news media reporter talking about this election, I would say the party in power historically faces headwinds, and Democrats certainly do on inflation, on gas prices, and on Joe Biden's approval ratings. However, this is not a typical midterm election. There are countervailing issues like the Dobbs decision on abortion and Donald Trump's deep meddling, both in candidate recruitment, which really ended up costing them the Senate, and also him being an issue in, you know, democracy in the January 6th commission and Republicans' inability to distance themselves from Trumpism were clearly factors. And you didn't have, Mark, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist or be a doctorate in political science to see that before the Dobbs decision, Democrats were losing special elections by an average of 6 to 9 points worse than 2020. That's wave year. That's definitely. After Dobbs, it was Democrats that were outperforming the 2020 numbers by about 3 to 6 points. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to think like, well, maybe Dobbs changed something. But you had this mostly white, mostly male punditry saying, well, abortion is faded as an issue. And so therefore, everybody's going to vote on inflation. And there's even a lot of like, well, the polls say that inflation is the number one issue. You know, it's really interesting, Mark. Exit polls, unfortunately, they didn't ask about democracy, but they did ask about abortion and they asked about inflation and they asked about crime and immigration. In nationally, inflation was the most number one issue of voters, but only at 32%. So only about a third of voters thought inflation was so a minority, right? But of those voters, like a lot of people are like, oh, well, that shows that Republicans are going to win because it's inflation. That's her issue. When they were asked about inflation, the Republican advantage on the issue was only 52 to 44%. So just a bare majority of that minority who thought immigration was the most important issue actually thought Republicans were better for inflation than Democrats. So it's really... it wasn't even an issue that absolutely benefited Republicans. And then you look at abortion. Abortion was number two. It was number one in Pennsylvania. It was number two nationally, but it was 32% inflation, 29% abortion. 60% of respondents were furious at the Supreme Court for ending abortion rights, and only about 28% supported it, right? So these are the two main issues driving the election. One of them was basically a very slight Republican advantage on inflation and a big Democratic advantage on abortion. And even immigration, Mark, you know, when the political press says, oh, immigration is a big issue, that's Republicans are going to win on immigration. When the exit polls dug into immigration, 60% of respondents said that immigrants make the country better. Only about 25% said that immigrants make the country worse. So even immigration wasn't playing. So you have these assumptions that the political press is making based on absolutely nothing. And so people like me and people like Simon Rosenberg on Twitter and Joe Trippi were saying, we're not saying that there's no wave election happening. What we're saying is that there's no evidence of a wave election happening. We were looking at the polls. We were looking at voter registration numbers. We were looking at special election results. We were looking at all these factors that would have sort of given us a hint that something was happening. And Mark, you remember back in 2010, we were talking the whole time. It's like, yep, we're going to get our asses whooped. I mean, we don't make this stuff up. We're not playing, right? And so we're looking and looking and looking, and we're seeing all along, we're saying this is a really tight election, which is the best that Democrats could hope for, given that sort of national climate and how partisan we are as a country. So that's what it was. And so it was weird sitting out there for this last year going like, why don't they see what is right there in front of us? To the point that the New York Times did a poll of four House races, battleground House races. All four of them, Democrats were leading. And the first paragraph was, four new polls show fresh proof that Democrats are headed towards a historic midterm wave election loss. The poll literally had the four Democrats winning these four battlegrounds. And by the way, the Democrats won all four of those races, and the polls were right. And there's no way to look at those polls, think those polls are correct, and then write a story that said that Democrats were headed towards record losses. So it's been weird. Political press is broken. They were following along the Republican narratives and they just adopted them. But also, I will say, a lot of Democrats played along too, because they wanted to inject their BS agenda into, like, Democrats should be talking about my issue. And if they only had talked about my issue, then we wouldn't be losing next Tuesday when not even a single vote had been counted. So it's been disappointing all around to see, though, that narrative be so resilient against all evidence.
No, that's important. And I'm glad we're talking about that. I think it also, what we have to feel good about is that in the past, that type of coverage would have demoralized our base more. But we performed. And as you said, we haven't seen all the final numbers yet, but the early numbers indicate that the younger population going down to 18 years old made a big difference. I saw something, this is not confirmed, but that their percentage of voting, 18 to 34, was above the 50 and over crowd like us. Again, I don't know if that's not confirmed yet, folks, but we have.
Yeah, I would be shocked if that was true, but. Yeah.
But that made a difference. And it might've been just in some areas. I want to be clear about that.
But we don't need it to be that high. We don't need it.
No. But
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
But a couple things, and then we'll talk about some of the big victories, but just some of the losses. Any thoughts, any handicapping on what happened in North Carolina? I think people were surprised by that. The early numbers look like Sherry Beasley might have done that. Might have been able to make a move on that. Do we have any idea what was going on there?
North Carolina, Trump won North Carolina by 3 points and she lost by 3 points. It is what the state is. We had those dynamics. And you know what's going to be really disappointing is that I haven't done this, but it's almost inevitable. There's a voter drop off in midterm elections. I bet you I can look at how much the Democratic candidate in 2020 got, how many votes. And it will be higher than what Bud got this year. That is just inevitable. You know, it's so bad. This is how crazy this is, Mark. If we got the Democratic turnout in Mississippi that we get in the presidential year, in a year that, you know, nobody's going to win Mississippi in a presidential year, right? But if we got every Democrat that voted in a presidential election in Mississippi, we would have a Democratic senator from Mississippi. SB would have won his race.
Yeah, That's right.
So it's tough to get people to vote on a non-presidential year. So what we saw in North Carolina is North Carolina is a +3 Republican state, very, very consistently. And so it's a winnable state. we got to organize. We got to have right candidates. Beasley, she's amazing, and I know running for office is hard, and I wish it on my worst enemy. I hope she takes another crack at it. Ideally in the presidential year, so she can, you know, piggyback off the presidential turnout machine and general turnout. But North Carolina is winnable, but it's winnable. It's not winnable in a neutral environment. And so we did not, right now we had, I think what, when it's all said and done and when all the numbers are crunched, I suspect we're going to see a neutral environment. The only reason Republicans are either likely to be in control of the House or very narrowly behind us because of gerrymandering. In a neutral environment, I bet we're going to win the House popular vote by about 2 to 3 points, which would mean that we should have a, you know, a nice 20-seat majority. But that's not, we don't live in a neutral House. It's gerrymandered House. So in a neutral environment, it's really, really tough to overcome. And so that just makes Tim Ryan's effort in Ohio that much more amazing. He ended up losing by about 5 points in an 8-point Trump state. And I kept talking, people kept saying, can we win it? And I looked at Ryan's numbers, you know, and it'd be like he's at 47 and JD Vance is at 45. And I kept saying, like, all the undecideds are gonna go to the Republican. And this is when you look at a state and you look at polls and you see undecideds, the vast majority will go to the majority party of that state. So if it was California and somebody said, oh, look, the California Senate race is tied 45-45, I would say, okay, the Democrats gonna win 55-45. Because California is a very Democratic state. So in a state like Ohio, in a state like Iowa, that is, it's really tough to get above 50 in this climate. North Carolina is not a heavily partisanized state, right? It's about as purple as it gets. It's 3 points Republican. And so, again, neutral environment, it was tough. But she's so amazing. I mean, she'd be the smartest person in Congress. Like all of Congress, not just the Senate, if she were to be elected. So I'm really, really hoping that we haven't seen the last of her and that she gets a chance to try again in a better environment for Democrats.
Yeah, I agree. We kind of, I think we're prepared for Val Demings. My disappointment is not having her as a national politician in Congress. I mean, she's of great value. I hope she stays involved somehow.
Mark, Florida, there's something utterly rotten that you don't lose those races by 15 points. Both of them, Chris, and Demings, there's no Florida Democratic Party. There was no ground operation that anybody can point to. I don't know if there was donor money in there that got, you know, eaten by corruption or just rank incompetence, but by demographics, it's like North Carolina. It should be like a R+3 state by demographics. So the kind of numbers we saw today, it just doesn't track. Something's really, really rotten. There's just no ground operation. There was no effort to get out the vote. It was very one-sided. So that was disappointing. But I think we were prepared for it. The polling showed that the race was getting away from the Democrats. And I think we learned in 2018 when during that wave, Democratic wave year, when Florida didn't come through and everybody kept saying, Republicans are going to win. And then the rest of the country, you know, went heavily Democratic. And that was the first sign that, well, maybe Florida's now playing to a different tune. And I think it really is. I also think Ohio and Iowa are pretty lost for us right now. I am excited about Michigan. Whitmer won by 10 points. We picked up the trifecta in the state legislature. We picked up the House and the Senate. Nobody thought that was in the cards. That wasn't even a thing. We were just hoping not to lose seats. And suddenly we got the trifecta in Michigan. That's going to be huge. And it shows that even a mostly white working class, blue collar state with, obviously it's got the big, black strongholds in Detroit and Flint and a couple other cities. But overall, demographically, it's a relatively white state. That's the kind of state that we were losing, like Ohio. And I don't know what's going on in Michigan, but they're doing the right thing there. Like the Democratic Party there is really figuring stuff out. So that's exciting to see that. It's exciting to see Pennsylvania start swinging back are we? Because Pennsylvania is, as Carville famously said, right? It's Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Alabama in the middle. And it started to look a little scary when Trump won in 2016. We're like, oh, crap, is it getting away from us? And so it seems to be swinging back. A lot of work. I mean, it's not, just to be clear, when we say, oh, it's swinging back our way, it's not because we sat on our asses, because if we do, that's what Florida looks like. Florida is what, when we sit on our asses and do nothing and hope for the best and hope for demographics. That's Florida happens. So there's a lot of people, including the Culinary Union, Unite Here, same folks that are doing GOTV in Nevada. We're heavily in charge of the Pennsylvania turnout operation, and they did lights out job. My God.
Pennsylvania was incredible. It was even bigger than we thought it would be. So that's good news. Mandela Barnes hung on.
Ooh, what a guy.
That was real close, wasn't it?
And it's, yeah, we don't know how close. I mean, I haven't seen if they, but, I mean, I don't know if you remember, Mark, either last week or the week before, I said that Wisconsin's going to be single digit thousands in the end, win or lose. And it looks, I don't know if it's going to be single digits thousands, but it's going to be close to there. And he ran a great campaign. He's a great candidate. Again, he's another one that I hope he makes a second run at it, that he's built quite an operation, and we don't want to see that go to waste. And he's quite an amazing candidate. So I'm excited to see him give another shot. And it's hard to beat an incumbent. I mean, it's no accident that our one pickup is a non-incumbent pickup, which is Pennsylvania. That was an open seat. And it's also, I mean, we don't, as we record this, we don't have final decision on Nevada and Arizona, but it's going to be like, it looks pretty good that we're going to hold on to those. It's incredibly difficult to beat an incumbent. So Ron Johnson's a survivor. This is the third time he's won incredibly painfully tight elections. Florida is very, very, very tight. So just a slightly better environment, and he would have pulled it off. So I'm hoping he makes another shot at it.
I hope so too. Okay, you feel triumphant. We'll go with that. We will see what these other numbers turn out to be. I hope we can hold the House. Obviously pretty confident, fairly confident about the Senate. As you said, this is historically unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a way normally the party in power loses many more seats. And you're right. 2 years from now, this will motivate people even more to go and finish cleaning the clock on this stuff and to get out to vote and get it done. So, folks, we will continue to look at how all of this develops. Obviously, Thursday Coast is every Thursday. We'll keep you informed. Marco's doing a great job. It means a lot that obviously abortion was right up there, at least at number two. And that's the impact of the Dobbs decision. So this was a wake-up call. It wasn't that in 2016 when it should have been. But, you know, now it is. And
abortion is on the ballot in 2024 as well, because Republicans have said they want a national bill to outlaw it.
Right. And so they go, and if they have the majority, see, they're so stupid. They didn't have a red wave because of Dobbs. They're dumb enough, if they get a little slim majority, they'll try to pass a law anyway.
Yeah.
And just help us out even more. So we are, what they're going to do. So that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. So I just want to, if we lose the House, the margins are going to be so narrow that they're going to eat each other alive, and then we can run against them. It's not the worst. The Senate's important because of judges. So we're still going to be able to get our judges through.
Yeah.
But the House, you know, hopefully we hold it, but it's not the worst thing in the world if we don't get them. And if they want to have investigations, we learned, Mark, that you don't have to show up, right? They didn't show up to our investigations. They blew them all off. So we've learned that it's actually okay to not show up. So I'm not even worried about their investigations. We just ignore them. You can ignore them. And
you're going to
let them rant on.
They are going to try to impeach, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. They're not even close to. Yeah, with a 2-3 vote majority, they're not going to have the votes to even start an impeachment. So I don't think it's going anywhere. They'd be in a bad place.
Looks like Trump's ready to announce, but I think we already know he and DeSantis are going to probably eat each other up.
Oh my God, it'll be delicious. They're already like Charlie Kirk, who's a right-wing pundit. He's already, you know, sniping at Trump because Trump called Ron the sanctimonious, which was actually kind of clever. I hate to admit it, but I don't like that.
No, remember when he first ran and nobody took him seriously? He was hilarious. He knows how to play the dozens.
Yeah.
He's good at the dozens. I mean, I didn't know comedians. People like, was somebody writing his material? You know, low T jab, low energy, low T.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Ted Cruz. I mean, who played the dozens? If you don't know how to play the dozens was him. You can't. I know how to play the dozens. Remember I was trying to get Elizabeth Warren. He kept saying Pocahontas. I said, Elizabeth, why don't you say Honky POTUS? And then after don't tell her to say that. She might accidentally say it somewhere. I said, but it's hilarious. She would believe. You got to play. When you playing dozens, you got to play. People like that. Otherwise, look.
They do like that.
She cracked up. She's like, oh my God, he said Honky POTUS. I said, yeah, say, when you say Pocahontas, you say Honky POTUS.
I loved it, Mark. I thought that was hilarious at the time, and now I still think it's hilarious.
I knew that. It's just like the sanctimonious. That's a good line. So you got to come back with a line to hit him with. Folks, Thursday Coast Civics with a Q, The Brief. Be sure to check it out weekly. We'll continue to watch all of this and a lot of it. So, Marcos, I hope this makes everyone feel better. We don't know everything yet. But as he said, they won't be able to function. First of all, we know they don't like to govern anyway. If they had a 40-seat majority, they wouldn't do nothing. Because that's their shtick now is to grind it to a halt. So either way, if they had a 40-seat majority, we'd run on them not doing anything. Now even more so because they won't move. What's Speaker Pelosi going to do? I mean, does she stick around or what?
I love Pelosi. She's amazing. Yep. She's an inspiration. I would like to see our party get younger. That's I think there needs to be a generational shift. There's too much, for lack of a, this is not the most diplomatic word, but I think there's geriatric, ossified leadership at the top of our party. And I think there's a place to say, to be gracious and open it up and get our party to be younger and more, not just more relevant, but more reflective of our party's demographic, which is younger people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would, and there's some great up and coming younger Democrats in Congress that I think would be fantastic in leadership roles. And so I'd love to see that happen. And I mean that also with who's our from South Carolina, the number two, number three, the whip, Clyburn.
Yeah.
Clyburn and also Van Hollen, not Van Hollen, the guy from the majority leader from Maryland.
Sonny Hoyer.
Sonny Hoyer. Yeah, I'm going on like 2 hours, 3 hours sleep. So my memories, it's so fried. But yeah, but these guys are all like, they're old, right? And you had like Clyburn talking about how minimizing the abortion decision, right? Like there's people that have, you know, they've been around for too long. They're too.
Right.
You know, they've been in that. It's time to like open it up for people who are more plugged in to that zeitgeist of our party.
And that's a culture. I've witnessed it, how people become the institution.
Yeah. And all the respect for them. I don't mean this in any way to disrespect what they've accomplished and how far they've gotten us. But there comes a point where it's time to say, okay, let's get that next generation. And I don't know. Maybe in a different episode, we could talk about, you know, who would be, you know, good. But I love like Jeffries, I think would be fantastic in leadership and definitely other.
We know these people, folks. They're great people. You know, whatever Stinney says to me, he says, oh, it's good to see Mark. He's been lobbying me since he was an infant. And I'm like, Stinney, you shouldn't say that because I'm 57.
that kind of says it all.
I'm be 56 next month. So, I mean, that means you've been 56 years, Stinney. Don't say it anymore. But I get it too, because, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of those folks got a later start in life black people couldn't be in the House from South Carolina. Women couldn't be, in Congress. So I get all that. And Nancy will say that to us. She said, you have to realize our clock is different. You're absolutely right.
But they've been there now for a while.
They've been there and we're not good. On our side, any of our constituencies, watch this. I don't care what they are, be they black, and not just in the House, our civil rights organizations, our special, well, not special interest, but our organizations built around demographics, African-Americans, Latinos, LGBTs, labor union. If you notice, Marcos, all of them tend to have people who have been there forever. That's sort of a culture. And that goes with being historically oppressed, you know, and there's a paranoia or fear of letting go too early. And is the next one really ready? And that's part, that goes with being involved in struggle for rights. But we've got to figure out a way to build up benches, pass batons, all of that, from the House on down to everything else we do in our struggle for civil and human rights. We get that. So folks, we'll continue to watch these things as they develop. Now, as you know, this is a podcast. We're not live. We're recording. And so this is Thursday, Coach, you're hearing it. Biden is going to speak after we record. So we're not responsible for anything. I hope he doesn't mess up on what we've said or I'm crazy. We should have, maybe he should hear this before he starts talking. I mean, claim a victory. Don't come out talking about something negative. But even, I guess it'd be hard for him to miss. He can't mess up the count. It still has to be a count. So he can't mess it up with his words. But yeah, we ought to feel good. We're going to keep it going, folks. This is the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, as Frederick Douglass said. I remind everybody, and I'll be quiet. They spent 50 years. They didn't stop. They didn't in 74 say, we give up. We couldn't stop Roe and just go home. They fought for 50 years. That's what we have to do. We tend to be, and this is where it balances, because sometimes younger people don't get this. We want immediate TikTok gratification. But it takes time to do this, to build. So if they can take 50 years reversing Roe, we can take a few more being disciplined. They did not give up, and they got it. That's the proof of it. It takes time. So we've got to take this and decide this is long-term struggle. Reverend Jamal Bryan said it in his sermon. We don't need walkers, we need runners. I would amend that to say not sprinters either. We need long-distance cross-country runners to get this done. So we'll get it done. Marcos, thank you as always, buddy. We're going to keep on fighting.
Yeah, thank you. Love you. Love your
Love you too, man.
Listeners. Look, everybody doing what they did to help win this election, and take a couple of weeks, relax, and let's get Warnock across the finish line in January.
Yeah, that's right. Let's do it. Thanks, Marcos.
Thanks.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.